Somewhere across the bifrost, way up high, there's a pod that I've heard of once in a lullaby. Skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true.
Hello and welcome to Across the Bifrost. My name is Sung Soo, and I'm thrilled to be joined by some members of Atomic Mass Games. Before we dive into that discussion, I want to take a moment and thank my patrons. I really appreciate it. You're all the key to keeping this pod going. If you're interested in supporting the pod, I'd appreciate it if you jumped over to patreon.com/acrossthebifrost. If you'd like to support the pod but can't on Patreon, I'd love any likes and shares on social media. Thank you all for listening. Okay, without any further ado, here's my conversation with Will Schick and Will Pagani.
Woo! Woo!
We're here today with Atomic Mass Games head of studio, Will Schick, and lead developer, Will Pagani. Gentlemen, thank you so much for making the time. How are you doing?
We're doing great. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. Working from home. Haven't put pants on all day.
That's the best day possible.
It's truly the dream.
No really. Pants day.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm getting paid.
No,
I'm getting paid
to not wear my pants. Policy. It will never be an office policy. Pants are mandatory at Atomic Mass Games.
Breaking news in the podcast within the first 60 seconds. Okay. I think everyone who's listening should know by now, but would one of you mind giving us the elevator pitch of Marvel Crisis Protocol? I know it's coming up quick, too. We're just about a month away, right? November 15th is release date still?
Yes, that is correct. Crisis Protocol is a fast skirmish game based in the Marvel Universe that pits heroes and villains against each other in very scenario and mission-oriented gameplay. That would be my pitch. Schick, you want to give it a go?
Oh, I have to go now?
Or you don't have to.
Is it dueling
did you like
pitches?
Mine?
That was okay.
Well, show me.
So Marvel Crisis Protocol is a fast-paced hero-level skirmish game where players create a team out of the pantheon of Marvel heroes and villains and do battle over various mission objectives in a narrative-driven story environment.
You did write the back of the box, so.
Oh, I see. I see. I see how it is. That's fine. Should have just read the back of the box. I have a box right here.
It's too long.
It is.
Okay, so not reading the back of the box. Got it. Well, thank you. And for more information about the game, I know you guys are doing transmissions on AtomicMassGames.com where you highlight different parts of the game. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do stuff on our website all the time. And then we also do stuff through Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. We're posting all over the place. And then we have a live stream that happens every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific where we hobby and hang, play games, all kinds of stuff. So we try to be everywhere at once while also developing and making a sweet Marvel game.
No, that's amazing. And I got to watch a game on Twitch, which I think is just the video of your live stream. And I think this week you guys announced that you'll be playing Hulk on the live stream. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're going to put Hulk on the table and see if we can beat the crap out of Dallas with him after my defeat at his hands last game.
No, I feel a little bad for Dallas. Send him my best. But Will, are those going to continue to be a regular thing, the streams?
Yeah, they're going to be things that we do time to time. I think it's a great way to kind of show off new characters as they come out and just kind of let people get a feel for how we use the character, how they interact on the table. They're definitely not going to be what I would call a regular feature. They're more of like a special feature.
And you mean playing the games on the stream?
Yeah, and I mean playing the game on the stream, yeah.
Because the stream is going to be every...
The stream is definitely every week, and the primary focus of the stream is unboxing, doing hobby and painting stuff. Like, we really want to just create a space where people can come in, learn some new painting techniques, talk to us about their painting techniques, show stuff off. But from time to time, we definitely want to throw characters on the table and put that painting to good use as well.
Awesome. No, definitely great to know. Working with Marvel characters, I can't imagine what it's like. They're such larger than life characters and everything that's going on in the Marvel universe. What was the biggest challenge for you guys taking the comics or even the movies and translating them to the tabletop?
I mean, I think the biggest challenge is just the breadth of source material, right? Like, and then the fervent fandom of people with Marvel, because it's such a big thing and it's a big part of a lot of people's lives. You know, I've been reading comics since I was six. There's people who are new to it, people who are old to it. And it's like, how do you see Spider-Man? Like, what does Spider-Man do as a miniature on a tabletop, right? Like, everyone's kind of going to have a different answer. So for me, the biggest challenge was doing right by these characters, making sure that they felt like the characters had just stepped off the panel to the tabletop, while knowing that there are so many different iterations and slight variations from all the amazing creative teams that have touched these characters over the years and put their own kind of mark on the character, that there was no way to make everybody happy completely.
At least not with just one version of a character.
No. No, I mean, we could do lots and lots of versions of characters, but definitely out of the gate, the goal was to like really encapsulate the core essence of each of these like really iconic and incredible characters that people have, you know, grown up with.
No, that makes a ton of sense. And from my experimenting, reading and playing the games, the characters have a great essence. So I really appreciate all the hard work you guys put into there. Like we said, the game comes out in just about a month by the time this podcast releases, November 15th. Everyone's kind of been going through the cards for the starter boxes. Are there any synergies between characters that you think might be initially overlooked that people should pay attention to? Just kind of like a launching point for maybe what people should consider for their initial teams?
Yeah, there's a couple that I really like. And I'm a huge, out of the core set, I'm a big Cabal guy. They're kind of my favorite to play. So I focus on them a lot when I'm playing outside of playtest. So like Red Skull can place characters with the Cosmic Cube. So like placing Crossbones, who is traditionally very slow because he is speed slow or short, is something that I've had a lot of luck with, because you can place him to be within range 2 or 3 if you have enough power to use overpower. And then you can attack twice with him, which is something that he doesn't normally get to do because he's a plodding character for sure. If you watch the live stream game, you kind of saw that happen to Schick, where he finally made it there, and then I think it was Iron Man?
No, it was Red Skull.
Oh, it was the opposing Red Skull.
No, I didn't have Red Skull.
Yeah, the opposing Red Skull.
Yeah, the opposing Red Skull rolled his pants off on me.
There you go.
I did some things with Crossbones that I, in retrospect, probably weren't great. I thought Dallas was going to commit more to one side, but, you know, there's things like that. One of the things I think people kind of miss in terms of Crossbones until they start playing him, speaking of him, is he is an amazing objective holder, because there are a lot of push effects in the game. One of the things that we really wanted to design into the basic gameplay and the core experience was that mobility was key. Like, characters should always be moving in some way or another, whether that's voluntarily or involuntarily by being pushed or thrown. And this was kind of a thing that Pagani hit on really early when we were running through the game design, as he sat there sleep deprived because he had just had a baby like 3 days ago. And he looked all cranky, and I was like, so you don't like it? And he's like, no, I really like it. I was like, well, your face doesn't look like that. And he's like, no, I really like it, but I think it needs more pushes. And so he went away to take care of the Bambino, and I started working more on adding pushes to different characters. And it was a really smart call, because now we have, like, so you have this game where everybody's getting moved all the time, and moving's really important, and you don't just wind up in a clump in the middle punching each other, because that wouldn't be fun for anyone. The point of that long story being that Crossbones' aggressive rule means that all of these pushes are really negligible to him, because most characters only push short. There are a few that can do more than that, but every time he takes damage, he moves short again from aggressive. So it's really hard to push him off of a point. And he just becomes this really bulldog type character where it's like, even if he's not punching you in the face, which he really wants to do and is amazing at, he's still scoring you points, and he's, until you just knock him out, he's going to be there.
So another thing that I really like, and once again as a Cabal guy, is Captain Marvel. You need 5 power to binary form with her. So if she's playing in the Cabal affiliation, every time she deals damage, she gains a power. So with her long-range energy blast at range 4, if she deals damage with that, she gains a power from Red Skull's leadership. Then the attack just gives her another power, and then her one power up for the turn is 5 total if you get to stand still and attack twice. So that makes her like a very powerful sort of stationary turret character that can hold down areas. That is, of course, until she gets pushed off the building or whatever she's standing on. But if they don't bring any type of movement stuff to dislodge her, she is a very powerful sort of ranged attacker that can sort of sit back in binary form essentially every turn. And that's one of my favorite combos as well. Yeah. I'm also just a huge fan of Captain America and the Avengers leadership in general. He is incredibly powerful.
One of the ones that people might not immediately jump to is how well Zemo works with the Avengers affiliation, because it lowers all of your superpowers for the first turn by one. And Zemo has a lot of cost two powers, and he typically has no problem attacking twice on a turn. So it lowers the threshold that he needs to be able to do his best stuff. So he can charge for one,
counter strike for one
every turn as well, which is a big deal. He can charge for one. He can use his full reroll ability, his master swordsman ability, gain power. It's just like you can get some crazy economy out of that. So that's a really good one that people might not initially think of. And another person who actually benefits a lot from the Avengers synergy is Red Skull, because Pagani talked about the place effect.
That's true.
And a couple of the other abilities that he has, Hail Hydra and things like that, all of those going down by one just mean that he's a lot more efficient at doing those things and still being able to pull off some of his bigger attacks. So, you know, there's some funny things that when you think about it, if you look at it, you can devise some pretty interesting strategies. And that's one of the really things that I think is exciting about the decision we made to just let people explore in a sandbox of these awesome characters and not restrict people to these like artificial factions. Because obviously in the storylines of the comics, every character has basically teamed up with everybody else at one point or another, whether it's an alternate dimension storyline, a meeting of minds because of a greater threat, all these different things. So to us, it was like, it made perfect sense to let people tell the stories they want to tell on the tabletop, and to also just open up the breadth and the experience of the tactical like options that you have available to you, to be able to just enjoy what you like to enjoy.
No, that makes a ton of sense. And I love that you guys talked about like some people really benefiting from power reduction, other benefiting from movement, and then some just being raw damage dealers. With raw damage dealers in mind, Hulk and MODOK were recently spoiled. And I love that Atomic Mass Games is willing to break preconceived notions about what a character in the game has or can or can't do. What are some tricks with these characters that people may have missed? I know I was just really excited about the number of dice I got.
For Hulk, that's definitely one of the big ones. It's just he's such a bruiser. But I think like for him, a lot of his tactical finesse comes from some of the cards, the tactic cards. Like Gamma Launch, you have to consider that card as a strong contender. Anytime you can place a character within range 5, which is basically all the distance ever.
It's by far the longest move in the game.
You know, you can use that at the start, on the very first round, in order to place a character basically completely upfield if you want to grab an objective really quick. You can use it later if you wind up on one side of the board, your opponent's on the other, and you have to go contest a zone. There's a lot of really crazy things that card alone opens up for you in terms of rapid repositioning and how your order of activations work.
One of my favorite uses for that card is in the Skrulls Infiltrate World Leadership scenario for mission, mm-hmm. or crisis. I'll eventually get
crisis.
That word.
There you go.
Crisis is that crisis usually turns into like a wild goose chase where mm-hmm. somebody finds the Skrull and starts running away with it. And when Hulk is like, "All right, Iron Man, you got to go get that guy that's got the Skrull," and you can just launch him range 5 down into their backfield to really kind of deal with that character that's trying to run away. Is an incredibly efficient use of that card. I'm also just a huge fan of Avengers Assemble on Hulk.
Oh, yeah. Like, giving him an extra free move is pretty huge.
So, like, he can get a free move from Avengers Assemble, and then he can also Gamma mm-hmm. Leap, and then
Second Wind's another great attack. One for him. Like, Second Wind, just dropping a damage and then also dropping a condition, the stun condition specifically, for him is such a big deal, because he can't... He's gaining 3 per start of the round, but if you're stunned, you're only going to gain 1. So being able to get rid of that stun when it's applied through the Second Wind card is huge for him.
Definitely. And then for MODOK, for me, once again, he uses the Cabal leadership very, very, very well. He's got a lot of active superpowers that he wants to use. Mm-hmm. I'm not even going to pretend to remember which one is named what, because they're all
amazing
MODOK quotes.
Those are the best.
I know
best abilities
all
ever.
Of the world is a weapon to MODOK.
Yeah.
That's his throw.
Yep. Bow to the Will of MODOK is where he forces you to move. Right? Yep.
Yeah.
And then you've got
P-Brain. Genius is infinite.
Yep. This is reroll.
So he has 2 powers that are affected by Captain America's leadership.
Yep.
And then he's got, of course, he's got Doomsday Chair, which creates multiple attacks, which is always great mm-hmm.
Cabal. And then, of course, even Psionic Beam with its ability to sap power, gain power, and then you tack on the Cabal on top of it. Like, he can ramp up power really fast.
And he uses it very well and uses very large quantities of it with his reroll abilities and stuff.
No, for sure. I mean, those characters seem really powerful. Are there any checks and balances in the starter box for them? Again, just trying to help people out so you don't get steamrolled by Hulk the first time he shows up on the table.
Crossbones can be a really effective Hulk counter if he's got a lot of power on himself, because he can strike with 8 dice. I mean, that and he gains power from that strike with 8 dice. So I mean, it's pretty likely he'll be able to do it twice if he starts with 4 or more power. And he's in position to be able to do it. He also has a fairly good physical defense, so he can kind of go toe-to-toe at least for a round or two with the Hulk.
Nashik mentioned stun is very good against him. Red Skull can stun.
Black Widow can stun, actually. Stagger is huge against him, so if Black Widow runs up, martial arts him and staggers him, you know, she's going to do a minimal amount of damage, but against a defense of 2, you're likely to be able to damage him pretty easy, even with 4 dice.
For mixed technique, yeah.
For mixed technique, which is her big attack.
And then, of course, Rocket Punch from Captain Marvel as well is also...
And then any type of push. So Iron Man's push is a big one. You've got a couple other options for pushes in the core box that don't require a size. So those things can definitely have big effects in terms of like just mitigating Hulk from getting to you, right? The trick with Hulk is that you don't want him to attack twice. So anything you can do to kind of push the distance away, the better off you are, right? Make him spend 1 to move, and then he only gets to attack once, and he's a lot less effective.
Yep, and if you make him spend that power, gamma leaping every turn.
Yep, and then he can't use Hulk Smash. He can't throw potentially like strongest one there is. So it's a bit of that, like, you know, much like in the comics with the Hulk, the best option is to kind of try to slow him down, push him away, to harass him from the sides, and try to not let him get to you, or at least not get to everybody. And then with MODOK, it's mostly volume of attacks. So with MODOK, like the big thing is he's kind of the opposite of Hulk, which I like, is that you really, if you're going to go after him, you want to throw as much at him as you can, and you want to get those high dice attacks.
But they haven't seen his injured side yet.
They
don't know what happens back there.
That's true. The glory of his injured side is something else. And that was another thing that to balance the characters too, right? For example, Hulk, the reason that he wound up not having an injured side is that initially he had all of the same rules, but he had a healthy and an injured side. And we tried splitting the stamina in different ways. But the fact was, is it turned him into a target where basically people just didn't want to deal with him. Because if you didn't, you didn't really have to worry about like the super damage that he could pull off. And if you decided to deal with him, you just try to knock him out really, or you daze him or knock him out really fast. And so by kind of taking away the injured side, he all of a sudden became so much more potent, because you have to chew through this giant wall of stamina, and you will do that, but you're also benefiting Hulk as you do it. And it takes a couple of rounds, even with concentrated effort, outside of like some crazy dice rolls, which happen. you know, that's the nature of the game. And that,
yeah,
I think, as we're going to talk about here in one of the questions, was the point. But it's going to take a while. And so the Hulk just gets better and better until he falls over. And so that was kind of like on his side, that was how we balanced it there. And then with MODOK, he's really, really chunky on that healthy side. Like, he's pretty durable, but when he goes to his injured side, he might not be quite as durable.
We'll say might not.
Might not. So, you know, it was kind of like those things and making sure. And then, of course, the threat values play a huge amount too. Like, Hulk is worth 2 Iron Mans. MODOK is an Iron Man and a Black Widow. So those characters need to be able to do a lot, because you're reducing your number of activations, right? And the game does have an activation economy, an action economy to it.
And also partially because like higher point characters can only be in one physical location at a time, and it's a very objective-based game. If you have a secure objective with 4 or 5 points, like, taking a Hulk may not be your best call, because he can only be in one place at once.
Mm-hmm.
No, awesome. Those are definitely things to keep in mind. And, you know, sometimes segues make themselves. So everyone who knows me knows that I'm a math nerd. So what can you tell us about the dice mechanics and how they were developed for Marvel Crisis Protocol?
So there was a lot of trial and error and a lot of spreadsheets happened with dice. You being a math guy, you and I have actually talked about this before, about how difficult the odds are to calculate a Crisis Protocol. And that's kind of intentional. We wanted to sort of get away from that oh, well, I have a 20% chance for this to work, or I can do this 70% of the time, and just get into the, let's just roll some dice and do this. And that is shown through a lot of different things. The different symbols on the dice each kind of have a meaning in the narrative of the game. Criticals are like when a character does something extraordinary. Wilds are when their plan works out. Failures are when they slip on the banana peel.
Mm-hmm.
Blanks, I guess, are when it just doesn't work out. And then, of course, hits and blocks are just their sort of standard fare. But specifically talking about the math behind it, right? We wanted these situations to come up where, like, let's say a Black Widow could walk up to an Hulk and do 5 or 6 or 7 damage, right? And so we have our exploding dice mechanic for that, which really gives you that heroic feel that no matter what's happening, no matter how strong I am, I can always have a chance. And that's, to me, and in my not particularly vast knowledge of comic books, is always an important feeling of the characters, right? They get beaten down a lot by the big bad guy, and then they always have that chance to come back, or they have that stroke of genius that comes in and really makes their plan work. So sort of our additional critical dice are represented by that kind of thing. And then, of course, we have the trigger effects, mm-hmm. which I think we've only shown ones with wilds and stuff, but there are certainly others in the future that will trigger off either multiple symbols or single symbols or things like that, which really sort of help build that narrative, in my mind anyway.
Yeah, like ultimately the basic premise of the dice that we worked with was not only that they would help with the narrative, they would also keep players engaged with the rolls consistently. So the idea of multiple reroll steps, of modification steps, of the initial roll with the crits that explode, right? At every point, we wanted to make sure that both players in the game, or all players in the game, felt involved, felt that the action was still, that was evolving before them. And there weren't necessarily very many predetermined outcomes, because that's not what makes a story exciting. That's not what makes a game exciting. It's having those like crazy moments where you're like, that wasn't supposed to happen, but it did. And not knowing quite when those moments will come up or not. And so that was kind of the thing we leaned into, you know, it's a balance that's there, but it also is balanced because it has a pretty large swing, and that gives a lot of flexibility for some really exciting moments and some real fun. But ultimately, like, once you boil it down on all the spreadsheets, the goal was to make sure that attacking was slightly more effective than defending, because the last thing anybody really wants is consistently to watch as their attacks do nothing over and over again. And so that was kind of the fine tightrope we walked to make sure that every attack has a fairly strong
to do something, which it is dice, right? And it is a game that uses both attack and defense dice. Mm-hmm. So the defense dice could go hot and the attack dice could go cold, but the goal was to find that line, I guess, where usually attacks are doing things. And even if they don't necessarily do damage, if mm-hmm. you roll the wilds, if you roll the other trigger conditions, you can apply an effect.
Yeah, and that's where a lot of those special, you know, the attack special rules came from, because even when Zemo's attack might not deal damage, because of a lucky defense roll or a bad attack roll or a combination of the two, if you roll that wild, you're still going to bleed them, and bleed is still a really important and critical part. Iron Man can still push you with his repulsor beam regardless of what happens. Some attacks do have their special rules trigger off damage when we think that's intentional and it makes sense. But making sure that stuff was always happening was really important. We never wanted the game to feel slow or to feel like it was a slog.
No, and in my playtesting, the game definitely does not feel slow or like a slog. So I think you guys really nailed it there. And no, that makes a lot of sense. Thanks for taking some time and explaining the dice mechanics out. I reached out to some math professors who I know through like a really stupid chess group, and one of them might come on the pod to talk about like the probabilities. It's a very complex system you guys have ended up
with. That it is. But don't worry about it. You just got a roll of dice.
So being respectful of your time, I know we don't have that much more time, guys, but I did want to know, like, what is each one of you most proud of or most excited about in Marvel Crisis Protocol?
Ooh, that's a loaded question. I mean, I think for me, the thing that I'm most proud of is just the end results and the excitement around the product, right? Like, this has kind of been a labor of passion and love for myself and for everyone here. But the chance to work on Marvel to add to that impressive universe, and to kind of make our own stamp on the characters, right? Like, these are drawn from Marvel, but yet they are uniquely our own, much like when an artist draws a character or a penciler or a story writer writes the story arc for the comics. It's like, this is our comic book. Like we've put our stamp on these characters, and hopefully everybody, you know, really resonates with it and loves it. And the fact that so many people have thus far, and that, you know, people are really digging on the miniatures that we've made, the way the game plays, the way the characters feel. And there's just a lot of excitement to get hands on the game. To me, that's like the proudest thing ever, because it just means that, you know, we've seen all of that hard work and that passion, and the hopes kind of start to pay off. And that's phenomenal, because, you know, at the end of the day, watching people talk about, oh, Black Panther looks awesome, I can't wait for him to come out in the game, I should do some reading on Black Panther. What are some good like storylines or story arcs to start reading for Black Panther? And then seeing people respond to that, that's fantastic. Seeing people are like, I've never painted a miniature before, but I can't wait to try to paint these, you know, and you get to walk them through that process. Like, that's so rewarding and amazing that, like, in the end, that's what makes me the most excited and the most proud, is that we just get to be a part of growing both of these communities, you know, through our kind of interpretation of this phenomenal setting and intellectual property.
Yeah, I mean, just to build on that just a little bit, like, all of us have been gamers here, most of us have been comic readers here forever, and really sort of getting to take something, call it your own, and then show it to other people and get joy from them from that thing is incredible. Like, the response we've received has been humbling and incredible, and I can't even really comprehend what's happening at the moment right now with our reach and stuff. It's been absolutely amazing.
Well, no, thank you guys again. Like you said, it looks like an incredible game. I'm really, really excited for it. Obviously, I made a podcast for it. So I've actually never been more excited for a garbage truck before in my life. When I saw that that was one of the models you were releasing, I was like, finally, something I can paint. So what's your favorite model in the MCP line?
I mean, the garbage truck is definitely up there. That was one where, you know, we worked in the industry a long time, and Dallas and I are our sculpting director, who's responsible for overseeing and kind of shepherding all of the sculpts for the miniatures and stuff. You know, we're like old school hobbyists, and we love terrain. Like, we love lampposts and streetlights and stuff. And when you tell certain people that you want to make that as a product, sometimes you get some raised eyebrows and like, a garbage truck? Like, really? And you're like, yeah, people will love it. You don't understand. People will really dig it. And to see people just go crazy over the garbage truck and be like, see, I told you people would really love it. And to have those people who kind of like raise their eyebrows and be like, really? Like, not so much in a harsh way, but just like, I don't get it. See, like, to start to kind of get it and to be like, okay, clearly, like, this is a big thing. You know, there's more to it than just cool superheroes and villains and stuff. That's really fun. So I always love it when people get excited about the garbage truck, because I was pretty excited about the garbage truck too. But I think my favorite sculpt wise so far out of the stuff that we've shown, that's tough. That Star-Lord, the Star-Lord that Dave Kidd sculpted is pretty phenomenal. Like, the motion in the coat, the way that he kind of blended this abstract like shape form with true scale like essence, and like, I just, for me, that one, every time I see it, I'm kind of blown away by the fact that that's a miniature and not just this high-end sculpture. And you know, that's true of a lot of the different ones that we've had, and every time we see a new release wave, I always have a brand new favorite where I'm like, this is the most amazing thing we've ever done. But like, my pick right now in this moment, it would definitely be, I think Star-Lord is just one of those ones that captures something as a miniature that really, for me, defines what we're trying to do and the goal we have for interpreting these characters into that genre.
So I will say that my favorite definitely hasn't been shown yet. So I won't tell you that one, but my favorite of the ones that we've shown so far is really tough for me. And it's between Spider-Man Miles Morales and Baron Zemo to me. And I think for two different reasons. Baron Zemo is like this excellent villain who's like a tactical mastermind. Mm-hmm. And he is like obviously super intelligent and stuff. And his character, or his miniature, is him like calling someone out with his sword, like you. Mm-hmm. And that to me is just so awesome. Like, I love that. I love it. And I love like his bomber jacket and his sword. Oh, so cool. Absolutely in love with that guy. And then Miles Morales to me, I get kind of the same feeling you do, Schick, about Miles as you do about Star-Lord, where it's like, hold on, this is, how big is this guy? This is a tiny little dude. Like, this seemed like a premium, I don't know, some giant statue or something to me when I first saw it. But no, this is a 40 millimeter Miles mm-hmm. Morales jumping over a newspaper box. And I absolutely love that miniature. It's so dynamic and it's so like, it encompasses everything that I know about the character in one go.
No, well, I'm obviously excited to see whatever your actual favorite is, Pagani, when that comes out. And if anyone needs more information about Baron Zemo, they can check out episode 3 of Across the Bifrost. We had Greg Webster on. We gave a little bit of background about comic books you could read to kind of up your knowledge or learn yourself a little bit about maybe some heroes you guys haven't run into before. So, Wills, I want to thank you guys so much for making the time and coming on. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Atomic Mass Games. I know you guys have a lot of stuff going on, but again, thank you so much for making the time.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.